It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 54 degrees under fair skies. At the airport, they are showing east winds to 3 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service continues to call for increasing clouds today with a high near 62, west winds to 5 becoming southeast this afternoon. Scattered showers tonight after 10 p.m., mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 50 and south winds to 5 becoming completely calm after midnight. And for Saturday, a 30% chance of showers in the morning followed by partly sunny skies and a high near 60, north winds to 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg talked ferries with Senator Murkowski. And Senator Bert Stedman says the legislature has some hard and possibly unpopular decisions to make regarding the permanent fund. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. A new era in partnership. That's what President Biden is calling his historic summit with the leaders of South Korea and Japan. The three nations held their first ever standalone summit today. And it was Biden's first time hosting foreign leaders at Camp David in Maryland.
A place that has long symbolized the power of new beginnings and new possibilities. In the months and years ahead, we're going to continue to seize those possibilities together. Unwavering in our unity and unmatched in our resolve. This is not about a day, a week, or a month. This is about decades and decades of relationships that we're building.
Biden has been pushing to counter China's influence in the region. The trio announced a new pact pledging to coordinate on security and economic issues. Search and rescue crews in Hawaii have covered just over half of the burn area in Lahaina, the historic city consumed by last week's wildfires. More than 100 people died on Maui, and many of those who survived are facing a housing crisis. Hawaii's governor says about 1,000 people have moved to hotel rooms. FEMA announced today it has approved $3.8 million in assistance. For the first time ever, a tropical storm watch has been issued for much of Southern California. NPR's Nathan Rott reports the warning comes as Hurricane Hillary, now a Category 4 storm, approaches the region.
Forecasters expect Hurricane Hillary to weaken to either a tropical storm or depression as it moves further north and hits colder waters or potentially the Baja Peninsula. Either way, heavy rainfall is expected across much of the southwestern U.S. and Baja through the weekend and into early next week. The National Weather Service says flash urban and arroyo flooding is expected with the potential for rare and dangerous impacts. Some places could see 6 to 10 inches of rain, particularly inland and mountainous areas. Flood watches have been issued from the U.S.-Mexico border all the way to Ventura County, just north of Los Angeles. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
A U.S. citizen already serving prison time in Russia is now reportedly facing espionage charges. NPR's Charles Maines reports.
According to media reports, the American is a dual Russian U.S. citizen named Gene Spector. Spector had been serving a 3.5-year sentence in Russia for a bribery conviction in 2021, but was reportedly taken into custody on new espionage charges by order of a Moscow court Thursday. While the nature of the spying accusation is unknown, Spector's apparent arrest comes as the U.S. has accused Moscow of unjustly holding several Americans on trumped-up espionage charges. That includes the arrest of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich last March and the 2020 sentencing of former Marine Paul Whelan to 16 years in prison. The White House has designated both Gershkovich and Whelan wrongfully detained and demanded their release. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg spent the last day of his Alaska trip in Southeast. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, he focused on the ferry system during a stop at the Juneau Airport.
On his last day in Alaska, Buttigieg and Senator Lisa Murkowski took the MV Hubbard from Juneau to Haines. But after they got off the state's newest ferry, it stopped running. One of its generators had been shutting down intermittently.
I didn't touch a thing, I swear.
Murkowski and Buttigieg spoke to reporters on the tarmac at Juneau's seaplane terminal.
In most of the ferry fleet, what we're worrying about is its age. But when a new vessel encounters issues, that's also a reminder that having a new vessel is not all there is to the story. We need to make sure that we're creating the framework where operations, maintenance, and capital planning can go well.
Buttigieg spent 3 days in Alaska. He traveled to Kotzebue, Anchorage, and Haines, learning about the state's transportation needs and highlighting projects made possible by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. The bill allocated more than $285 million to Alaska's ferry system to replace the Tustamina, modernize 4 other ferries, upgrade rural ferry terminals, and support operations. Those projects require a funding match from the state of about $105 million. The state says that money will come from a few different sources.
States that put forward a healthy level of skin in the game on their side are often able to unlock that much more federal support on our side.
But Murkowski said staffing remains a challenge for the ferry system. Its reservation center reduced hours this month due to staff shortages, and they're only taking reservations on the Kennecott through February because of a crew shortage.
And you can't operate a ferry, whether it's in good running condition or whether it's a 54-year-old ship. You can't operate it without the men and women.
The ferry system could have even more sources of federal funding. The U.S. Department of Transportation announced Wednesday that 6,500 miles of navigable waterways in southwestern and northern Alaska would be added to the United States Marine Highway Program.
When you enter into the Marine Highway Program, you're part of a national designation that can mean greater access to grant funding and policy attention.
The designation doesn't add new ferry service, but it could open up funding for future transportation projects in those regions. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Sitka Senator Bert Stedman says the legislature will not allow the earnings reserve of the Alaska Permanent Fund to run dry over the next 4 years, which would mean no annual dividend check for residents. Nevertheless, the Sitka Republican and co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee says there's an alarm bell ringing and legislators are going to have to make some tough and possibly unpopular decisions to keep the permanent fund healthy. Stedman was recently back in his hometown and spoke with KCAW's Robert Woolsey.
There was concern over the permanent fund earnings reserve, which is the portion of the fund available to both pay for government services and pay dividends to residents, during the regular legislative session this spring. But with so many other bills and hearings in play, it didn't get much notice. Then in July, at the quarterly meeting of the Alaska Permanent Fund Board of Trustees, CEO Devin Mitchell reported that even with relatively favorable investment returns, the spendable portion of the fund would be exhausted by the summer of 2027.
Most people didn't want to hear it. The people in the financial arena recognized the fire alarm was starting to ring.
Sitka Senator Bert Stedman has served in the legislature for 20 years. A private capital manager before entering state politics, Stedman was appointed by then-Governor Frank Murkowski because of his financial acumen. He is an ardent conservative in the original sense of that word. He is not going to spend down the permanent fund, the state's $80 billion oil wealth nest egg, to resolve short-term budget problems or to placate the constituencies of newer members who've been promised unrealistically large dividends. But he's only one legislator among 60. Not everyone in the Capitol or in the governor's office is on the same page.
If the legislature goes haywire and does all these overdraws and these starts pulling out, $2.8 billion for dividends, the House will be on financial fire, and it won't be easy to put out. So that was one of the big driving factors why the Senate refused to overdraw the permanent fund, refused to do a large dividend. It wasn't because we don't want to pay out things that are popular and the people want. Is sometimes there's just financial necessity. You have to deal with it, just like your personal checkbook. You know, there's sometimes you just got to do what you got to do.
That means limiting the size of permanent fund dividends. For the last half dozen years, the legislature has put 5% of the permanent fund's market value into the earnings reserve, where it can be spent. The governor has argued for a 50-50 split of the earnings reserve between dividends and state government. The Senate disagreed and passed a dividend calculated on just a quarter of the earnings reserve, which would still come to about $1,300 for every Alaska resident. The House hasn't accepted the new split yet, so other measures were enacted to keep the earnings reserve afloat, such as cutting corners on inflation-proofing the permanent fund itself. Any other year, the legislature would have returned over $4 billion to the fund's main account. This year, that didn't happen.
I think we put in a little over $1 billion, holding back some liquidity. We can do the same thing next year. In their calculations, they look at fully funding the inflation-proofing. We could skip it for a year or two if we had to, or reduce it like we did this year to keep the dividend stream going and then pick it up when the markets become more robust. But what you can't do is start overdrawing the permanent fund.
There is another strategy that's gaining momentum in the legislature which would end the fight over the earnings reserve, and that's ending the earnings reserve itself. Instead of two accounts, just have the main permanent fund account and set a hard cap in the Constitution on withdrawals, which would prevent future legislatures from spending it all away. Stedman is a fan.
Yes, no doubt about it. And that would protect the permanent fund, except if there's a super need where you had to go to the public and they'd have to vote to take it out. Which of people would if we had a big earthquake or some really nasty disaster? But other than that, I don't think they would. And that would force the legislature and the administration and the entire state to live with a 5% range. But it takes a constitutional amendment.
Stedman considers the Alaska Permanent Fund on scale to be one of the largest sovereign wealth funds in the world. Norway and Saudi Arabia have more money, but they have far more people. He'd rather have the permanent fund last in perpetuity and not be exhausted in a generation or two, even if that means a lower dividend check. As co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee and in charge of the state's operating budget, he's got a lot of leverage to help other legislators see things his way. But he's also got two decades in the Senate under his belt, and he understands the price of looking the other way when the alarm bell rings.
I guess it comes with the territory and experience. Some people can see a collision coming and some people can't.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Bristol Bay welcomed two medical students this summer. Courtney Stage and Michael Caden Hoffman both grew up and planned to work in Alaska. This summer, they were in Naknek and Dillingham as part of the University of Washington's Rural and Underserved Medicine Program. KDLG's Christina McDermott spoke with the students to learn more about their work and opportunities for Alaskans interested in medicine.
Most medical students spend their first 2 years with a textbook or several. But this summer, Courtney Stage and Michael Caden Hoffman are working in rural community health as part of a program through the University of Washington. Stage is based in Naknek, a Chemai Community Health Center. She's originally from Homer and wants to practice in her community one day. Working in Naknek, she says, has been a great learning opportunity in what rural health care looks like.
I'm really here to listen. I feel like the community has more to teach me than I have to teach them, so I'm definitely taking it all in.
Stage says she sees a connection between fishing, the area's main industry, and some of the common injuries she's treated. Naknek welcomes a large fleet as well as several cannery workers every summer.
You're seeing hand injuries that are happening during fish processing. You're also seeing like crush injuries. I've seen a lot of soft tissue infections in hands, things that I have not seen from shadowing in clinics in Anchorage areas.
Caden Hoffman is from Fairbanks. He says he spent his first 2 weeks assisting in Kanakanak Hospital before transitioning to the BBAHC clinic in Naknek. He says the work at the hospital gave him a chance to see several different departments in action.
So I got to see what emergency medicine looks like there, inpatient medicine, outpatient medicine. I went by the diabetes clinic. I worked with the pediatrician for a day. And so it was really cool to see how all of that functions in a rural setting.
Both students are in the region as part of the WAMI program. WAMI stands for Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. Stage explains it's a unique opportunity for University of Washington medical students.
The WAMI program is very unique among medical schools because it allows people in states who don't have a standalone institution to attend medical school for the first 2 years of the program in their home state and to work and live in their own communities while they're learning about medicine.
Alaska ranks third in the country for health professional shortage areas. That means there aren't enough primary, dental, or mental health care professionals statewide. Kaden Hoffman says that he hopes those interested in medicine look into WAMI. He says it's important to get locals involved in their healthcare system.
You understand the problems that come in. You understand the resources available better. And you have better, you know, connections with your patients, and that results in better health for everyone.
The WAMI program in Alaska received additional state funding this year and plans to add more seats. Kaden Hoffman completed his time in Bristol Bay earlier this month, and Stage will remain in Naknek until September before they both head back to school. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
How does the salmon cross the road? Sounds like an Alaska transportation riddle. The answer will soon be with financial help from the Federal Transportation Department. USDOT is sending Alaska more than $44 million to install fish-friendly culverts and other means to get migrating salmon to the other side of roads. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports on the first round of grants from a new federal program.
U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg admits he's a fish out of water when it comes to talking about fish migration.
When you take on a job like Secretary of Transportation, there are some things you know you're going to be working on, planes, trains, and automobiles. And there are other things like anadromous fish passage that you do not realize will be on your plate.
Anadromous fish, that's salmon and other species that live in the sea as adults and travel up freshwater streams to spawn. Roads that cross fish streams are supposed to be designed for fish migration, but Alaska still has lots of culverts that fish can't get through. Sometimes the problem is water volume, with the culvert acting as a pinch point. Some culverts are perched too high above the stream bed. The DOT has a new program to fund better fish crossings. Among the first grants are 9 projects across Alaska, from Klawak to King Salmon. The largest grant is $20 million to the state of Alaska to improve a dozen stream crossings along the Parks Highway. The state says when complete, that project will open 50 miles of anadromous streams, leading to hundreds of acres of lake habitat. Secretary Buttigieg says the program benefits fishing communities.
This is not just a question of conservation or preservation. It's also a question of economic security and food security.
The program was funded through the bipartisan infrastructure law. Nationwide, it supplies grants of $200 million a year. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Mortgage rates are higher than they've been in decades. I'm Nova Sapo with the Marketplace Minute. The average interest rate on a benchmark 30-year home loan is well above 7%. It hasn't been that high since the early 2000s. Mortgage rates move in tandem with the 10-year Treasury yield, which is rising on the assumption that the Federal Reserve will keep rates higher for longer to tame inflation. But the latest Reuters poll of economists finds most think the Fed will begin cutting rates by next summer, and most expect no more rate hikes. The poll shows the probability of a recession is down to 40%. Deere & Company says customers are gobbling up large tractors and other farm equipment as the manufacturer clears supply chains. Quarterly profit rose 60% to $3 billion. I'm Nova Sapo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 18th day of August, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 6:40. It will set again at 9:45. That will give us 15 hours and 5 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 43 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 40 degrees set in 1966, and our record high was 74 degrees set in 1944, 1999, and then again in warm 2019. Currently 54 degrees under fair skies. It's an entirely pleasant afternoon. Northeast winds at 6 miles per hour out at the airport where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for increasing clouds as the day wears on, with a high near 62 and west winds to 5 becoming to the southeast. Scattered showers for tonight after 10 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 50 and south winds to 5 becoming completely calm after midnight. And for Saturday, a 30% chance of showers in the morning followed by partly sunny skies with a high near 60 and north winds to 10. Mostly sunny skies for Sunday. Let's check in with the brand new one from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 33, date issued 10 a.m. on August 18th. The Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District will now open to commercial salmon fishing for 102 hours from noon Friday, August 18th until 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 22nd. Closed waters will be the normal closed waters as described in regulation until noon Saturday, August 19th. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Saturday, August 19th until 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 22nd at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255101. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th until 6 p.m. Monday, August 21st in the following areas. In the southwest of Fog Neck, northwest of Fog Neck, Raspberry Strait, and northeast of Fog Neck sections of the Fog Neck District, the northeast Kodiak District, and the eastside Kodiak District. As previously announced, there will be a 30-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the outer Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District from noon Friday, August 18th until 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, August 18th until 6 p.m. Sunday, August 20th in the following areas. In the Izua Bay section south of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Friday, August 18th until 6 p.m. Sunday, August 20th in the following areas. In the Duck Bay section and the Izua Bay section north of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. The following areas will be extended from 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th until further notice. The Outer Iakuluk, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District and the Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Uyak Bay and Inner Uganic Bay sections, will remain closed. The following areas are currently scheduled to close at 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th. The southeast of Fog Neck, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, and Shuyak Island sections of the Fog Neck District, and the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 252105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Cost recovery fisheries began in Katoy Bay Special Harvest Area on August 5th, and fishing opportunities in the Duck Bay, Izuit Bay, Inner Katoy Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record of phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. and it's the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And indeed, according to the weir count yesterday, in the Karluk River, 47,586 late-run sockeye passed the weir yesterday. That brings their total escapement for the year to 399,889 fish, which is the most in the last 10 years or so. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for the east side, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. Southwest 15 today and 4-foot seas. For tonight, southeast 15, becoming variable 10, seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, on our east side, north 15 and 5-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 20 today and seas to 4 feet. For tonight, variable 10, becoming north 15 after midnight with 2-foot seas. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, north 15, seas to 2 feet. Taking a glimpse at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 4:22 p.m. and be 7.6 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:02 of 1.5 feet. Over on the west side, your next high tide will happen at 4:46 this afternoon and be 13.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:46 p.m. of 2 feet. Notice is hereby given. There will be a regular meeting of the Board of Education on Monday at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. For more information, contact Jamie Bennett, Interim Secretary to the Board of Education, at 907-486-7550. Also next Monday, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 3 p.m. on Monday. On Tuesday, the Parks and Recreation Committee will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 6 p.m. And next Wednesday, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's Conference Room. That's happening at 5:15 p.m. They continue to work on Lower Erskine. Asphalt milling and paving is going on there on Monday, so local traffic will be allowed, but the senior center will have curbside meal delivery from noon to 1, and flaggers will be stationed at the intersection of Mission Road and Lower Erskine Avenue, as well as within the work zone.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the August 18th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Boy, it was great to have summer come back for a visit this past week, wasn't it? Here's hoping it sticks around for another week or two. Lots of fishing action happening now along the rivers and beaches as the pinks continue to roll in and the silvers are starting to show up. You'll often hear a fisherman say they're out practicing their fishing skills during the pink season so that they can be ready for the silvers. So if you haven't started your training yet, now would be a good time. Looking toward the night sky, there's actually quite a bit going on this week. The Perseid meteor shower is waning, but will still remain active through the end of the month. Jupiter is about the brightest thing in the night sky right now. Look for it rising in the east at about 11:30. Saturn comes up a little bit earlier and is further to the southeast by the time Jupiter outshines it. And then right before sunset, we'll see a sliver of the new moon. That moon will actually become the second supermoon of the month when it becomes full on the 30th. Because it's the second full moon of the month, it's also called a blue moon. So is it a super blue moon or a blue supermoon? Early risers will get a treat this week too, as Venus makes the switch from the evening sky to the morning sky. Later in the week, probably around Wednesday or so, we'll start to see Venus in the east just before dawn. And the bright planet will be our morning star for the rest of the year. KHS Volleyball starts this week with home games on Friday and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. each day. Stop by the high school gym to give the varsity, JV, and C teams some support as they play Houston and Reddington. Go Bears! And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.